Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. excuse me, I've got something that is silencing me or obstructing my windpipes. Anyway, sorry about that. And, you know, you take care of all of that stuff before the show starts, and without you know, further ado, every time we do this, I still have these. Anywho, forgive me. This show is also sponsored by republicreview.org, and when I do that, when we lead into this, you know we're going to be getting into some content. Before we get into some content, we want to kind of close out the analysis of the old content. And so I want to make sure that everybody understands that what we covered in the Enabling Acts and how to look at that, by all means, go look at those yourself. And as a matter of fact, what I need to do for the next time around is I need to actually pull in the Enabling Acts of some of the West Coast states or the Western states where they have been robbed of their resources as sovereign states. But anyhow, you were listening to the only show that gives you the academic and academic evidence-based solutions of where we've been, what we're doing, what the heck's going on, and what do we have to do if we're going to save our liberty and if we're going to save this republic and our Constitution. Let me remind you, every Tuesday I am live, and let me see, that's 11 o'clock West Coast time, 2 o'clock East Coast time, on Liberty Not Tyranny on Rumble. And actually, we go through questions, presenting information, and so you can always contact David Torres if you want him to ask me questions so that we can engage for you. I don't think they have a mechanism yet to be able to take questions other than written questions. But anyway, Keith Broders and the Constitution Education .us is where you can find Keith Broder's constitutional education for free. You can go and start learning about the Constitution right there at constitutioneducation.us. Timber Nation, gotta love them. Yeah, they make great products, and you know they may not be, you know, quick, but this is all custom, and it comes to you. The biggest thing is it comes to you free shipping. So there you go, because not a lot of furniture places will actually provide you free shipping. Now, they'll do that possibly with really junky crap, you know, like some of the stuff you buy off of some of these other big bulk large websites, you know, Wayfair and so forth, but you will not get this quality. Go check them out, timbernation.com. Radio dust covers. As a matter of fact, let people know if they're interested in getting good, you know, equipment and good, good rack, you know, for their equipment, bookshelves, the hardwood quality stuff. Just get the word spread out. Get it going. I'd like to see Timber Nation actually become a very large business where they're employing more than 100 people so that they could tell the Biden administration, Pac Sand, you don't have any authority here. Your Labor Department doesn't have any authority here. Anywho, as we move forward, again, I was talking about radio dust covers to protect your electronics, to protect your equipment that you've paid a lot of money for. So let's go do the right thing and protect those things so you don't have to continually buy new ones from the pet dander, the dust, the particulates that get in the air. You know, every time you turn on your computer and you hear the fans run, right? You go, well, why is it doing that? Well, it's obviously doing that to keep things cool, but it's doing another service for you that you can't, there's nothing you can do. Radio dust covers won't save you from this. But radio dust covers will save you from letting that dust actually accumulate right there on your box so that when you turn it on, it sucks that stuff straight in. Because what your computers are doing for you is it's purifying the air. It actually pulls in that dust, and the way the electronics and the electromagnetic attraction to the dust and a lot of the crap that flies through the air, it sticks right there to your computer. Your computer, when you're running it, is doing air purification for you. It doesn't do it well. You would probably better off if you've got, if you have a high amount of dust, you probably in your office, in your computer room, where your, you know, high-end electronics might be sitting, you may want to get a real good quality, you know, HEPA or some kind of air filtration system, you know. And I can say that when you look at doctor's offices and other offices, a lot of people have gone out and bought air purifiers, HEPA quality air purifiers. Now, we're not talking about a purifier for COVID. What we're talking about is getting a good quality air purifier for removing the dust out of your air so that there's less to settle on your stuff. And will it take away your need to dust? Well, not as often. You won't need to dust as often because it does reduce the amount of dust. Just mind those filters. You keep those filters clean, and that dust machine, or I should say that air purifier, will actually work for a long time for you. Anyway, we've got a comment. Line 425-270-5416. One of the things we're diving into today is We want to cover the presidential vetoes of the Department of Transportation. And I'm not finding it on, oh, here it is. It's on this page right here. So we're highlighting that. That's what we're covering now, just to make sure that we take credit for what we're doing. And what we're also going to do is give you some more content through this week and going into Thanksgiving. We'll probably have a marketing, or we may, so like what we're doing today, we've got one story that I think is marketing for you, and we have a very important suggestion for you in trying to get involved so that we could hopefully save ourselves. But the reason I'm actually doing the Department of Transportation is because of the story. But before I get into the story, because this will probably take two episodes, we're going to go through Madison's veto of the Department of Transportation, as well as Monroe's veto of the Department of Transportation, as well as Andrew Jackson's veto. And so before we get into that, let's kind of close on the Enabling Acts. There is no doctrine whatsoever in the Constitution that grants the federal government, when it creates a sovereign state, when it makes a state that becomes a party to the Constitution, there is nowhere at all where the federal government has been given the authority to diminish the role, the powers, and the responsibility of the states. And so this is what it says, Section 3. New states may be admitted by the Congress into this union. That's it. That's it. It's a semicolon at the end of that. That means that there's your statement right there. New states may be entered. It doesn't say new states will be entered at a diminished power or diminished sovereignty, but then they qualify that no new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of any other state, nor any state be formed by the junction of two or more states without the consent of the legislature and the states concerned, as well as Congress. Now, the reason this is kind of important is that Congress, the second section in Section 3, subsection, I should say, is kind of interesting, because there's too many people that think that states are territories, or that states can, the federal government can maintain or create a territory within a state. The Congress shall have power to dispose and make of all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States, and nothing in this Constitution be so construed as to prejudice any claims of the United States or any particular state. So supposedly, what they say there is, well, if they choose to allow you to become a state, they don't necessarily have to. No. A state is a separate state is no longer a territory. When a state is enabled, and it is created. It is granted its full privileges, and it is to be given equal footing, which is why every state in the union was granted equal footing until we got to Missouri. And this is where the federal government basically dictated to Missouri that they had to be a slave state. And Missouri, the many people in Missouri weren't happy with that, and they actually did what they could. And when the Dred Scott case came along, which was about, 30 some years later, a jury of 12 white men actually found Dred Scott to be, you know, entitled to freedom. And then the Supreme Court actually ruled against it. You know, you listen to some of these rulings, you look at some of the rulings, and you think, well, they're kind of putting a positive spin on it. But no, in many ways, they weren't. And one of the beautiful things that Hamilton understood, he understood the importance that the Southern states had in protecting their slavery. And he exploited that for his own means. Hamilton was not a person that believed in slavery, but Hamilton was not a person that cared or even pondered on that type of stuff. Hamilton was one of those guys that utilized advantages to manipulate people and to get them to do what he needed them to do. This is why you'll find, when if you ever read the ratification debates, the New York ratification debates, and then you read Hamilton's Federalist Papers that he wrote, you will find that, sure, he's talking pretty big game in the Federalist Papers, but he doesn't talk nearly as big a game in the ratification debates. We'll be right back after this.
Time to watch a presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic. I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so apparently, and you know, so here's the problem. Anybody that is writing on this, the enabling acts later on that are within the right of the federal government to start actually changing the sovereignty level and the station or position that a state has coming into the union other than fully equal with all of its partner states, then they have a problem with this thing called the uniformity clause, because the federal government has to treat each state uniformly. In other words, they all have to be equally footed. They all have to have their same rights. In other words, that the federal government can't be meddling in their business regarding their resources, their land, or anything like that. So here's the problem. The federal government started creating territories and creating this, well, we're going to manage these territories. And then they grew up from, and when I say territories, I'm talking about with treaties for Indian populations, the indigenous people. Now, they could create treaties, but there's nowhere in the Constitution that granted the general government to own the land to place people on. No, where is that? It's not a part of the needful buildings. It's not a part of forts and magazines. So how is it that the federal government was granted? They just assumed this to themselves. They didn't even bother going to the states. And the problem was that the states at that point in time, you know, didn't understand the Constitution. They didn't understand it. And the reason they didn't understand it is because these things called the ratification debates were lost to them. Nobody pointed to them. Nobody highlighted them to say, hey, you know, the compact was clearly defined in this thing called the ratification debates. If you go read that, you'll understand what the federal government can do and what they can't do. You'll understand the purpose of everything. And that's the truth, my friends. But nobody wants to read. And the reason why people say, oh, you got to read the Federalist Papers. Don't waste your time. The Federalist Papers don't even cover the details like the ratification debates. They don't cover details like, because this has come up again. Just in a recent discussion, somebody has asserted that the Constitutional Convention in 1789 was a runaway convention. Now, I guess because if you never read the ratification debates and you read the argument, you might be able to buy into that argument. You might be able to. But there's one little problem that actually kind of takes and creates a level of strong resistance regarding the runaway convention paradigm. And that happens to be Federalist Paper number 40, where Madison comes right out and says, are you kidding? It was right there in the commission that we were to, you know, take care of the, what was it? The expeditious, you know what? I'm going to actually pull up the Federalist Papers while I'm talking. And what we're going to do is I will actually read that little part for you because why? This is important because we're talking about the power of the Enabling Act and all of the legitimacy of the Constitution. And so when you start looking at this argument that the Constitution is illegitimate because of this constitutional, now, you'll hear the people that are arguing, oh, no, the Constitution is legitimate. You can't have it both ways. You can't say that they violated what they were supposed to do, ergo the product that they did was illegitimate. They were told to go do this, and this is not what they delivered, and it is illegitimate. You can't have it both ways. And so I find it interesting, just absolutely interesting, how people, you know, see it this other way. Anyway, here's the, this is Madison's Federalist Papers number 40 after he was accused of being a part of a runaway convention. And so this is what he says to the people of and the state of New York. The second point to be examined is whether the convention were authorized to frame the proposed and proposed this mixed constitution. The powers of the convention ought, in strictness, to be determined by an inspection of the commissions given to the members by their respective constituents. All of these, however, had reference either to the recommendation of the meeting at Annapolis in September 1786 or to that from Congress in February 1787, it will be sufficient to recur to these particular acts. The Act from Annapolis recommends the, quote, appointment of commissioners to take all consideration the situation of the United States to devise such further provisions as shall appear to them necessary to render the Constitution of the federal government adequate to the exigencies of the Union, and to report such an act for that purpose to the United States and Congress assembled as when agreed to by them and afterwards confirmed by the legislatures of every state will effectually provide for the same. The recommendatory act of Congress in the words following, quote, whereas this provision in the Articles of Confederation and Perpetual Union for making altering therein by the assent of a Congress of the United States and of the legislature of the several states, and whereas experience hath evinced that there are defects in the present confederation as a means to remedy which several of the states, and particularly the state of New York, by express instructions to their delegates in Congress, have suggested a convention for the purpose expressed in the following resolution, and such convention appearing to be most probable mean of establishing in these states a firm national government. Okay, so now New York is basically saying they need to establish a firm national government. Resolved that in the opinion of Congress, it is expedient that on the second Monday of May next, a convention of delegates who shall have been appointed by the several states to be at Philadelphia for the sole and express purpose of revising the Articles of Confederation and report to Congress and the several legislatures such alterations and provisions therein as shall, when agreed to Congress and confirmed by the states, render the federal Constitution adequate to the, this is highlighted, adequate to the exigencies of government and the preservation of the Union. From these two acts, it appears that the first object of the convention was to establish in these states a firm national government, and that this government was to be such to be adequate to the exigencies of government and the preservation of the Union. And these purposes were to be effected by alterations and provisions in the Articles of Confederation as it is expressed in the Act of Congress, or by such further provisions as should appear necessary. As it stands, in the recommendatory act from Annapolis forth, and the alterations of provisions were to be reported to Congress and to the states in order to be agreed by the former and confirmed by the latter. So he points out how they basically looked at their commission and said, you know, we have to do what is necessary to provide, one, the firm government, but also a government that is capable or adequate to the exigencies of government. Well, in essence, they were given an impossible task, apparently, as considered. But here's the important thing. When you go through the ratification debates, the few states, because there were many states that just rubber stamped this Constitution because they recognized it was a much better document. Some of the southern states, like Georgia, they rubber stamped it just because they knew that this was protecting slavery, which was essential to them. Delaware, because it was providing them equality in this union and a good foothold for maintaining their liberty. So they rubber stamped it. Many states rubber stamped this. They did not vigorously debate the Constitution. It is only in states like Philadelphia, in states like New York, Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina. Now, they're in Massachusetts as well. I think that there was another state, maybe Maryland. Actually, so some of the states, as we went through this, and we're going to go through the ratification debates again, probably at the beginning of the year. We're going to just start off the year by going through the ratification debates again. But when you look at what happened in Massachusetts, which was basically February when they ratified the Constitution and submitted their recommended amendments, every state that ratified after Massachusetts, they all provided, even if they rubber stamped it, even if they rubber stamped it like Maryland, they basically provided their insights as what amendments they would like to see to this Constitution. So the reason, again, that we're elevating this is because I want you to understand that right around the corner, there's going to be legislative sessions and there's going to be arguments against the Convention of States and there's going to be arguments for the Convention of States. I submit to every state legislature that they are a representative government, and in so they are required to represent their constituents, not to listen to and allow lobbyists to come in and hijack their all the important work that they're supposed to be doing. And so let me finish this when we get back, because I don't want to bleed into the promo like I did just previously. So we'll be right back after this.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me, AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so if we're a representative government, then where in the people's house in each state, where is there a right to access the representatives of the people for lobbyists? In other words, corporations. In other words, it's one thing for a CEO to walk in and say, you know, that it, because you're in that state, you're operating in that state. It's one thing for a CEO to go into their one representative. I mean, the CEO does not have access to every representative. They only reside in one. They can't reside in all. This is why we need to go back to making every all elections, instead of just every, all elections local. We need to start recognizing the limitation in a representative government of who we're supposed to represent. But this is a very easy process that state legislatures like Teresa Manzella, who doesn't want to see a convention of states, it's a very easy process that can she can shut down, that Mark Meckler can no longer come in their doors. That if they are to be reviewing a desire by the people, they need to get some threshold of sentiments by the people. In other words, it'll force Mark Meckler to spend a lot of money to get people to be motivated to go to and convince people to actually go to the state houses to demand a convention of states, period. And then the people, or the representatives of the people, I should say, will never be distracted by having to debate or even entertain these types of lobbyist agendas. As a matter of fact, if you understand the problem lobbyists actually bring into a state house, you will understand the importance of shutting them down, because they should not have access to your representation. Now, if they get to vote and they have the power to insert people into government, then okay, that's their representatives. But our constitutions are framed as such that it is the people and or the sub-element of government, the counties, that are to have representation, not businesses and non-government organizations and lobbyists. Because bottom line, there should not be one legislative bill coming that comes from a lobbyist. All legislative bills should originate in the House of the people, especially if it's got taxes to it. And it should be originated by the desires of the people or in service of the people. Why do you think we're losing our liberties? Because it's the lobbyists that are serving themselves. And why is it, do you think, that we're losing our property rights and everything else? Because the lobbyists are being served instead of the people. Folks, we need to go back to a Republican form of government. The Constitution guarantees, and as a matter of fact, this very conversation, this very paradigm is being presented in Red Pill Expo, actually was presented yesterday in Red Pill Expo when they played my video, which basically talks about how to do this, where the state legislators need to actually shut down who can influence their elections within their legislative district. The only reason state legislatures won't do that is because they are on the take from all of these businesses and corporations and so forth. So, anyway, let me just kind of move forward. So, as we've kind of put everything to rest, moving into the Department of Constitution, because I think we've done everything we can. If you look at the states are sovereign, that when that land is created, all that land, unless it's for military purposes or unless it's for security purposes, all of that land belongs to the state. All of these Indian tribes that were created in all of these states are unconstitutional. That's state land. Now, if the states want to manage and maintain that, but the federal government has no business controlling, dictating, and basically keeping their heels on the necks of the Native Americans, period. It's immoral what they're doing to say this is where you have to stay. They're free, and they actually, because the 14th Amendment failed to do this, we need to pass an amendment that says all indigenous people are citizens and have the equal rights as citizens in this United States, and be done with this. Anyway, so now we're going to get into the Department of Transportation, right? And so before I do, I need to actually ask a very, very plain question. When you think about the different powers that the federal government exercises, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know what? The infrastructure is something. And why is this important? And why are we putting this in the curriculum right now? Why are we discussing this right now? Because Biden and his $1 trillion infrastructure bill that is actually going to implement taxes and strings and loops to come and attack us with taxation. We need to shut this down. If you live in Arizona, call the Democratic senator that is in Arizona. Thank her for so far protecting the rights and representing, you know, the majority of the people in Arizona. Thank her for what she, you know, what she has been doing in representing Arizona. And please ask her not to support the Biden's unconstitutional infrastructure bill. It is very clear that this is a violation of the Constitution. And you may want to even inform her that when it came to President Madison, when it came to President Monroe and President Jackson, all three presidents vetoed bonus bills or infrastructure bills to beef up and improve roadways and so forth, because the federal government had no constitutional authority to do this. Teach her this. Call her and give her this information so that she will vote against it and it will fail in the Senate. The same thing with Joe Manchin. Anybody in, you need to start sending emails out and start letting people, these two senators, these two Democrats know. Why is it that James Madison, James Monroe, and Andrew Jackson, three presidents, vetoed Congress's attempts to take money and spend it on infrastructure? Because it wasn't found within the Constitution, and still to this day, even though there's a Department of Transportation, that in itself never was amended to the Constitution, as all three presidents basically asserted. They asserted that we had to amend the Constitution to actually be able to do this work, that it points right to the Department. So, but most people think, well, that's got to be one thing that the federal government should be able to do. So let me ask you this, because the very first executive department that they created as a usurpation of power was the Department of Home in 1849. The next one was the Department of Justice. Now, you got to remember, they've only got jurisdiction over four crimes. Why did they create a Department of Justice? Because they were already creating a bunch of laws that they wanted to start enforcing that they had no constitutional authority to do so. The Department of Agriculture, that's not a power within the Constitution, but they created it. The Department of Commerce. Now, even though the federal government has the responsibility of managing the commerce flowing into the United States, as well as the commerce flowing out of the United States, and they have the ability to tax all commerce coming in, they do not have the power to regulate how states are to produce commerce, how states are to do anything. Their only job is to ensure that states do not start committing what we would call economic warfare against each other, or start creating taxations that would actually hurt these other states. That's what happened that caused the Civil War. The southern states were being taxed, and they actually left the Union because of that. But the source, the genesis behind that, those taxations, was to literally punish the South for their slavery. That's why they were doing that. And the South had every right to secede. The problem is that the North was wrong in saying you can't secede. What the North, again, I'm not even going to armchair quarterback that. I've covered this so many times. If you want me to cover it, you've got my comment line, 425-270-5416. Anyway. So the Department of Commerce was set up in 1903. The Department of Labor was set up in 1913. And in 1926, they tried to pass an amendment to legitimately regulate labor. The states rejected that amendment. So the Department of Labor was another unconstitutional usurpation, that they were creating regulations and laws and growing government. Health and Human Services actually was the Hugh Department. Health, Education, and Welfare. Well, that was 1953. Each of those kind of broke off on their own. And we'll get into finishing these powers that were created all outside the Constitution, where they were never delegated these powers to do these things. And so, to be clear, when you start understanding how you have to amend the Constitution for the federal government to do something, it makes it really simple to say they can't do almost everything that they're doing. But we'll be right back after these two promos.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
And so keep in mind that the Department of Transportation, which they attempted in 1817, 1822, and 1830, these presidents said you have to amend the Constitution, doesn't mean that the federal government wasn't doing it. They just couldn't create the department yet. Because if you remember, FDR started creating highways. I mean, a lot of the presidents were spending money. They were spending money on the railroads back in the 1800s. Things that they had no authority to do. So as we kind of move forward in the powers that were being created after the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, the Housing and Urban Development in 1965. Now, this was all about because all of a sudden this unconstitutional act called the Civil Rights Act that was created, you got to understand that acts do nothing other than it empowers the federal government how to regulate their territory in Washington, D.C. An act is not constitutional. So after the act, they created this Housing and Urban Development, and this is how they started getting into, you know, making sure that everybody was being treated fairly on housing. Things that come across as noble become a very offensive way or vehicle of attacking people. And so the Housing and Urban Development has been utilized lately in being able to actually condemn and take property. And then that property, you know, gets to go to the Department of Interior, the Home Department. Nine times out of 10, they are the big pursuers of seizing and taking control of property. And then what do? They do nothing with it. They actually abandon it and they allow it to be that way until they decide to build maybe government housing or whatever it is that fits their Agenda 2030 plan. Then, after the Housing and Urban Development in 1966, this is when Johnson created the Department of Transportation. maybe he wasn't aware that Madison, Monroe, and Jackson said, hey, you can't do this without an amendment. But that didn't stop the federal government because they've already created 7 departments already without amending the Constitution, where there were clearly no powers enumerated within the Constitution to exercise those 7 department powers. Then in 1977, the Department of Energy was created under Jimmy Carter. And that actually stepped us into this new direction where the federal government could now sell us downriver and dictate, as we see today, making us buy, you know, what you call windmills, solar, and everything else, and causing the problems that it has caused. Just recently in Texas, when we had that deep freeze, that was a byproduct of federal government overreach and unconstitutional actions in getting into energy and that market space. Education. So finally, the Department of Hugh finally breaks away its education, right? And then the Veterans Affairs in 1989 was created. That should never have been created. The Department of Defense actually exists, and the Department of Defense should have been the ones to maintain and manage and help those who they hurt and broke, period. And then finally, the Homeland Security, which Bush gave us, that is actually becoming a part of this huge army that is going to basically patrol us, as Obama said, an army that is just as well equipped and just as well funded as our military. Anyway, so as we talk about the Department of Transportation in retrospect, or I should say in the perspective of James Madison and in the perspective of James Monroe and in the perspective of Andrew Jackson, we want you to consider all 12 of these executive departments that were created without any powers enumerated in the Constitution to actually justify the creation of these departments. And secondly, the fact that they never amended the Constitution to create these powers. Now, before we go, because I've got 5 minutes, we'll start off with Madison. But before we go and before we get into these documents, what I want you to understand is there is only one way to force the federal government to shut these nefarious departments down. Only one way. And that is Republic Review, where the states as the parties actually step up and interpose to the government in telling them they have no authority to do this. And if you do not, you're not safe. The federal government is not safe. Everybody that is doing all of this, and you know what? There's a lot of people that are completely ignorant that are working in the federal government that think, hey, this is great. You know, I've got a great retirement coming up. You know what? You're not entitled to that retirement. That's a fraudulent retirement. Sorry. Social Security, which is another power that's not even listed here because it's an administration. Social Security was a huge usurpation. I only went through the executive departments. I didn't even come up with the Environmental Protection Agency, another unconstitutional agency. The only entity that I believe we owe it to America because it affects every person is the Social Security Administration, not to amend it and validate it, but to basically apologize to every American person and ensure that they, at a minimum, get paid back what they put into it. Those people who need that help based on the plan itself, then they should get that help from that plan. And we need to actually draw the line to say, if you're 30 years of age or younger, don't bank on anything that you've put into this. We're going to draw that line. So if you're born, you know, after from this year or on, you will not be entitled to this. And so what we'll do And what maybe we should do, I think everybody should get paid back. So, you know, anybody that has put something into Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, all of those types of things that they're taking out of your pay and your employer's pay, that needs to get paid back, period. And we'd stop the Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare taxes. And as we shut down all of this government, go to the debt clock and look at the unfunded liability and the cost of it, and then look at the revenue that they're currently bringing in to cover all the rest of this unconstitutional government. They have enough money to be able to do that and actually fund the defense and do what they are entitled to do, and we can actualize Social Security, move forward by ending it and actually freeing everybody. So that all the states now then have the ability to boom their economy because the federal government has no controls whatsoever over these states. Now, there's going to be a huge movement that the states will allow the Department of Energy or the Department of Environmental Protection, these types of things. We cannot allow the federal government those types of powers. If you haven't learned anything from history, you should have at least learned this, that when they have power, whether it's right, whether it's constitutional or unconstitutional, they will exercise unrighteous dominion with that power because they'll start using it as a weapon. And as we see today, they're going after anybody who doesn't take a vaccination, and they want to decimate you, your family, your livelihood, and everything else because you're not cooperating. You're perceived as the enemy. And the government, when a government looks upon its constituents, if parts of them are enemies or not, then we've got a problem. Now, it's one thing to say that there are actual enemies to the Constitution, but we should never be looking at enemies to unconstitutional government. Everybody should be an enemy to unconstitutional government. That's why most people are looking. That's why the grievance industry for the conservatives or the complainers against the progressive and the communist movement is so big. Because there are lots of people that realize that this is all unconstitutional. They have no power to do this. And so let us go ahead and move forward, because what I want to do is I need to give you the start off with James Madison's veto message. Now, this was, again, in March 3rd, 1817. Prior to this, I'm going to give you the background history on this because I want to go into the details. You need the details. When James Madison was preparing to retire from his presidency and from his public service, James Madison was approached by friends of his in Congress, and they came to him and said, "We would like to create a bill that would actually, you know, be a hallmark for you." In other words, they didn't know what to do, and they asked Madison, "Give us an idea of what kind of bill we could create." And with that, I will get back to the story of how Congress was told what we needed to do, and bottom line, they didn't do it. They just assumed that they could do it in an unconstitutional way. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.